families yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
It's just you and me today, Conan. Ciara McKeever has a vomiting bug, so he had to pull out this morning, so I didn't have time to get somebody else, but I'm sure we'll be able to handle it together. We're going to do part two on a little bit in Congress, and we'll cover the game. See, the covering the games in weather like this, what we can't go like Pat Spillane, who'll basically write a team off based on one game in hurricane conditions. Like, it was, it's incredible stuff. First of all, you'd say congratulations and fair play to anyone who tugged out, anyone who sat on a bench, or any manager or management team that stood on the sideline on a weekend like that. There's no doubt about that.
Oh, we had a game on Sunday morning, and I kept waking up on Saturday night just checking my phone, hoping that this is going to be cancelled. Listen to that wind. But we had a tug out as well.
And it, was it difficult to play in it? Or
it was 3G pitch, so it was actually all right, but right. Very windy.
Yeah, okay. Did you take the wind in the first half or go into it?
We went into it.
Did you concede the kick out going into it?
Go away, come on.
We'll start off with Dublin Tyrone quickly. And this had an old fashioned tunnel row, which, look, obviously nobody condones. What were they doing going in together? The reason, my theory on why they went in together, is because the game was played in such good spirits in the first half, no niggle in it, nothing to suggest this was going to happen in the tunnel, that the two teams felt completely comfortable walking in together. Because it's always the case now that one team stands out. It's not a rule, they just do it as best practice. And they went in together, and it looked like something was said or something happened going in, and then they go absolutely flaking each other.
Yeah, like, it is, it's a bit weird that you can't just assume that they can run in together and nothing happens. A tight tunnel, Tyrone Dublin, something will happen. And, like, by all accounts, like, Padraig Hamsey got the black card afterwards, so, like, you know, maybe it was him hitting somebody's shoulder and that started somebody else reacting to
could
him.
Could have been that. Yeah, he looked like he took a bit of punishment in that row, and he's meant to be a boxer.
Yeah, he did, because I saw a camera angle from a fan just up above looking down, and Hamsey was sort of bowled over and somebody had a grip of his shirt and he was getting points in the back of the head. And yeah, so obviously there was fists flying from every direction.
Yeah, there was. There was a few of the Ballymun lads were right in the thick of it over on the right-hand side, because I was watching on an air. And I think they must have did separate broadcasts, because you could clearly see who was involved in it on the air broadcast. And then I was sending on a couple of texts to some of my friends, and they were like, we're watching an RT, and it's impossible to tell who it is. So it was interesting. I don't think the camera was conclusive. I just sent a screenshot of faces. I didn't see, it's too difficult to make out who's swinging, although I would have a good idea. I don't want to mention the names, because obviously, you know, I'm not going to start mentioning names when I would say the CCCC would find it difficult to punish anyone involved, because it was not conclusive probably enough.
Yeah, and to be honest, there were too many fists going, like, from both directions. Yeah. So it's hard to actually nail down who was doing it.
And you see the camera, like, Colm Kavanagh saw this, he had no interest in ever getting up towards it. He just started talking to somebody.
He was happy enough being behind.
Well, I would be very comfortable back there.
It's like, there's too many people, I can't get in.
There's absolute madness in there. Yeah. You don't know whether you're coming or going.
And in fairness to, like, Brian Kennedy, I think, was on the front line as well, and Michael McKernan, who isn't the
big man, yeah.
Yeah, but they were all standing the ground.
But that's what it is, though, isn't it? It's almost like the front line men. I think they're all lunatics. Why do you want to be the first ones in for like that?
Maybe they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time.
they didn't choose to be in there.
Porrig, what have you got us into?
But it was madness, lads. Conan, that game shouldn't have gone ahead. It wasn't the right conditions for a game. Without banging on about player safety, but it is an issue. You know, I'm not going to blame that on the row, but like the Dean Rock shot, you know, like, I mean, that's crazy stuff playing Gaelic football. You learn nothing from it. Like, I mean, you have people saying Tyrone went back to, you know, their what they know based on the Galway game. They didn't. They just went on because that probably worked that night. How would you get through them? Do you know, even though you'd have to say Dublin looked like the most likely winners until Brennan's brilliant goal.
Yeah, I don't know why they decided to put it on. Maybe they just left it too late in the day to call it off and thought there's too many people have come up here, let's just get on with it. But
well, they're screwed though if they didn't play it, because when do they play it? We see Armagh Fermanagh is off, We don't know yet when that's supposed to be on. Mm. And there's no spare weekend for it. That's going to have to be played midweek. They were under a lot of pressure to keep. And it was, and one of the Air Sport games and RT games was called off. So neither TV would have had any game Saturday night. They were under a lot of pressure to play it, I would imagine. Nicky Hart wanted to play it because Tyrone wanted to play it, obviously, because they would have thought they would have had a much better chance of beating Dublin in it. So there was a lot of pressure being put on that game being played.
Yeah, I know, but like the TV is one thing, but, you know, like RT didn't show the Shamrock Rovers Bows game because of safety concerns, because of the weather. Like these things happen. That game went ahead, even though the weather was so bad.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know. It was just so bad. The pitch inspection beforehand. Like I saw a clip of it, the referee was throwing the ball up and it didn't come back up. Like it just landed in a big puddle of water. Right. I don't know what they were inspecting.
Would you be a conspiracy theorist to say that the referee would be getting a phone call from headquarters, this game goes ahead. We can't stand the embarrassment of, you know, of trying to...
Yeah, ruining April for clubs again or, like, you know, squeezing in there. But I don't know. Like I saw a lot of people speculating that Mickey Hart was mad to let it go ahead, but... I don't think Tyrone suit that sort of ground.
Well, Niall Morgan said it did. He said maybe conditions played a wee bit in our favour, all right, but we're more than happy to get the result. I do think that you don't get through a team with dropping a lot of bodies back in that conditions easily.
That's a fair point. And the only thing I'd say about Niall Morgan's thing is that they're playing Dublin as well, so you want any sort of advantage you can get. If that's dragging them down to a certain level,
well, that's it. You say it's the leveller, you know. Although the two goals were absolutely outstanding scores. I had a friend of mine yesterday said that he thought that Brennan was going for a point. He must be joking. Oh. He was going for a goal. And Mickey Hart said that he goes for goals like that and scores them for Trillick all the time.
Yeah, like he definitely wasn't going for a point. He rattled that into the roof of the net.
Yeah.
Like that was a vicious shot.
It was a vicious shot. And obviously, Basquel scored a brilliant goal as well. After brilliant work from Merchant and Fitzsimons with a lovely little offload, the two of them, what were they doing up there? But you're playing against playing against Tyrone, who were dropping bodies back.
Fitzsimons did really well there. Like, he was surrounded by three men, and a Colin Kavanagh was in on him, and usually when that happens, you're in trouble. Just the octopus tentacles come around you, and there's no getting out of it. But Fitzsimons managed to wriggle his way out, and Tyrone probably disappointed because three people had gone around and the ball still popped out.
Yeah. The Donegal-Monaghan game was interesting tactically a little bit, like without reading again too much into it, but Monaghan conceded the kick-out. Wasn't it weird seeing a team conceding a kick-out when we have become so accustomed to pressure being put on every single one that it was a throwback to 3 years ago? Now, again, Derry did it to Cork down in Páirc Uí Chaoimh against a strong wind as well. Conceded the kick-out, dropped men back. I can understand that. I despise conceding kickouts, and I despise dropping players back in front of ahead of the ball to wait. But against a gale force wind, there's a logic to it. Why push up and let Sean Patton do what he did in the second half? We'll talk about that in a minute. Why would you do that? It makes no sense. What are you getting from it? Sean Patton's going to go, they're pushing up, I have a boomer of a kick, this is landing on your 45, mate. I think tactically Monaghan did the right thing. They did completely wrong thing by putting Kieran Hughes and Michael Murphy. That's madness. But the conceding the kick out, I can't quite get that.
Yeah, because Sean Patton could just take 10 or 11 players out.
Completely out.
And when you're against the wind, and that's what you want. You want to be able to get through your team, and it's way harder. You have to get to 30 yards out. Like, actually, you saw Conor McManus refusing to take those frees at the edge of the D.
Yeah.
Bringing Rory Began up to the edge of the D. So that showed how far they would have had to get in. So... yeah, I do get it. It's a bit of a shame because Patton's so good. When you see him just chipping into the cornerback, it's like, ah. Now we have to wait for them to get up and just the whole game slowed down because of it. But I know, I completely understand why Monaghan did it.
Yeah, no, I can understand. And then obviously the big press Monaghan put on in the second half, this was for the goal.
Yeah.
So the goal was a classic. Like, what a boomer. Now, the wind died down. This is impossible what Patton did. He wouldn't have been able to do that in the first half. Began couldn't do that. And I think Began has a bigger kick than Patton. Began kicked a feckin' 65 against Dublin, like, for God's sake. But it died down. Donegal were getting scores easier in the second half. They played better. They were much better than Monaghan, but they were kicking scores from further out. So the wind died down. But there's no way Monaghan imagined that Patton could have hit, do you know what I mean, that far up the field. It was absolutely an incredible kick. And then it was moved on so quickly. Obviously the press, that's obviously the risk teams are willing to take with an aggressive press. Whether Monaghan should have been doing it when they had a man down seemed a little bit kamikaze. But again, Monaghan would have known what it was like playing into that wind, and they would have calculated that, you know, we're probably safe enough based on the fact there's no way he's going to kick it that far, and he did.
Yeah. Hey, Willie, what did I tell you? Always go with the wind. One of the main reasons, because it can die in the second half.
I always go with the wind too. Would you believe, I'm not going to get on about Moor Park. I was in a Moor Park. We'll talk about that in a while. Not only did the wind die down in the second half, it changed direction.
it was against Leash both times. Yeah.
Yes, both times. Now, Kildare were much better. I'll talk about that in a minute. But wasn't it absolutely gas? McBrearty gets on the ball for the goal, and Began comes out, says, right, I'm going to take my black card, I'm going to pull him down, I'm going to be the pantomime villain. Comes out, takes McBrearty down, walks away with his back to the play, as in, look, I had to do it, everybody. McBrearty hops back off, continues to play. So not only did he not stop the goal, he gets a black card after it.
He thought he did what he had to do to stop the goal.
Yeah.
He scored a goal and you're still off, mate. See you later.
It was an outstanding piece. He kept walking, as in, you know, almost saying to the crowd, you shut up. You know that kind of wrestling kind of stuff. It was a classic. Ryan Wiley got a textbook black. You would imagine in the first half it was a clear black card, and he tried to proclaim his innocence, but it was a pull down and it was a counter attack on. I was surprised to see him on the sideline. Then the camera panned to him. He's just standing on the sideline in his jersey wearing a bib.
Yeah,
is there no better way to keep a man warm for the 10 minutes than that?
But I assumed that maybe he was just in the middle of a warm up, or like, you know, you've been a sub yourself when you're told to warm up. You're like, yeah, you know, I'll go do it, but you want to just watch the match, you know, rather than running up and down.
Yeah,
I don't know. Maybe it was just his decision to stand and watch the game rather
just
than
just a bib on him. Even put a tracksuit top on or something. Like, I mean, geez, he's a hardy hooer. And then Langan completely stitched him up for a second one.
I didn't think he did.
I thought he played for that now.
Like, I don't think, again, I don't think Langan was looking to get him a card. I think sometimes you're going to fall over. He's charging out. He gets a wrap around the body, like, you know, Whitey's nowhere near the ball. Sometimes you're going to fall over when you get a big hit like that, when you're leaning forward and you're trying to drive through a tackle. I don't know. I didn't think Langan stitched him up anyway.
Really? Jeez, I don't know. I think he did. And here's an example. I was talking about the press and the kick out against the wind, right? So Donegal pressed the kick out. So in the first half, Began took a kick out to McInnesby, who moved it down to Conor McCarthy, who scored a point. This point was scored in about 7 seconds because Donegal had pressed up. And when Began found his target, oh shit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it does make sense. That was one point that stuck out for me, going with a gale force wind like that, pressing a kick out is madness. But again, do you wonder, do some teams just think, right, we press the kick out and that's it? I honestly think that a gale force wind ripped the script up. Yeah. This is not a normal day's football. Do you know what I mean? This is what, just because we're in the habit of doing these things, that doesn't mean that we'll do that today.
Yeah, I genuinely think some teams need to think about it. Like, this goes down to club level as well. If there's a gale force wind, which there usually is in February, March, sometimes April, you should start to even thinking about your team, like, you know, changing it around if you're going to be with the gale force wind.
Because, yeah.
Like, you know, I know I'm wing forward, dropping back a lot of the time, and sometimes we've been playing with the wind in the first half and you're going to have all the dominance, and sometimes I'm actually thinking, there's a great player on the bench there who could boom one over from 50 yards, which I'm not going to do.
Yeah,
would you not be better just... I never said it, obviously, but they would be better bringing him in and letting him sort of swing it over.
But that would be mad. And we normally play a sweeper with a gale force wind. Do we need that?
Yeah, exactly.
Do we need to give them a sweeper?
Yeah.
Let's make sure they change their team around for the sweeper. So that makes no sense. Like you said, do we need a working half forward? Let's play through the half forward line and actually take the game to them. I don't see enough evidence of that, because let's be honest, that forecast was well known. So you know you're going to have a gale force wind in one of the two halves. Let's actually pack our forward line for the half we have with the wind and try and put this game to bed.
Yeah, like Kieran Thompson and Paddy McBrearty swung over two long range ones and it looks so effortless for them, and you're thinking, like, geez, that could be happening more often here, because as you say, when you've got a big wind like that, you are more or less closer in than you actually are with a wind like that on your back. You have to put it up and get it accurate.
But no, it definitely makes sense.
I could see why Monaghan pressed up for that Began black card, because they were 6 points down at the time, they're a man down. Sort of thinking, we need to squeeze, keep them inside, like, we have the wind.
Yeah.
And then Patton obviously just does that.
And they knew Patton was kicking into a huge wind. So, like, I mean, it was a calculated risk. It wasn't crazy. I saw some people on Twitter saying, I've never seen a press like this before. I've seen Kerry do it to Dublin in Croke Park, which is much riskier in much higher stakes games. That's crazy talk.
And that was
just a regular press. Like, it was a press where you leave forwards up there unmarked. And they had the advantage of knowing it was a gale force wind that had died down a bit. Kerry did that without any wind in Croke Park against Dublin.
Yeah, 2016, and then Dublin started copying it, and then other teams have done it since. And like, it's just usually you have time to get back. Like, the keeper isn't supposed to be marking the full forward. Normally the halfback will drop back to full. You know, you'll have time to shift back by the time the ball gets there, but Patton's was a freak. It just went the whole way through.
Yeah, Kerry Mayo game was a weird game in that both teams played much better with the wind. It can happen sometimes, but it is unusual, let's be honest. Kerry used the wind played into the wind brilliantly and should have had the game to bed. James Horan said after the game, we were standing off a little bit and ultimately that's what cost us the game. I just can't comprehend why Mayo would be standing off Kerry. They've just been hammered down in Killarney the year before. There's a bit of niggle between the two teams. What are Mayo playing at if they think they can just stand off Kerry?
And again, like that whole play in the elements, like they're coming against a big breeze. Like it's harder if you're in their faces. They can't kick it. Like, you know, they have to run the ball anyway. So push up on them rather than push, like dropping back and letting
Mayo's
them come up
game.
The pitch.
That's Mayo's game to do that. It doesn't make sense. And Higgins just completely went to. It's not a good sign when you see someone like Keith Higgins just tracking Moynihan. And then just deciding, I'm just going to stop tracking him. That is not what Mayo do. That is not what any team that is in any way serious about winning anything does. That's not what any club team does. You cannot be tracking a man and then just decide, I'm going to stop tracking him. That's what Higgins did. And look, I don't want to be too critical of Higgins because it's not usually his form. But is there a deeper malaise going on there? Like for Higgins just to decide, I've tracked him enough now.
Yeah, that's a good point.
It's un-Mayo-like.
I was wondering that, like, is there something just sort of set in, or even maybe just for this game, like, you know, just weren't at the pitch of it. You saw the players just running through, and when that happens, more and more people switch off, and like sometimes it only takes a second or two, and a player's gone, the way Moynihan was. And like, I just don't think Mayo brought. Like, I don't know what they're expecting. Kerry are in town, they're in Castlebar, they need to win, now more than ever. Like, they should be up to that pitch, but they weren't, and. It wasn't just Higgins, it was a few of them that were just sort of lacklustre about following their men.
Yeah, no, it definitely was. Like, I mean, Clifford's penalty, it was a clear penalty on Moynihan. That was the lead up to it with Higgins. He struck the penalty, you could say he struck it too well, and it came back. But he could have had another penalty, only he was too honest altogether. Like, James McCormack pushed him when he re-cut the ball. I'd have been making more of that contact. You've just missed a penalty.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
That was a soft push though, wasn't it? It was just a little.
Yeah, but you fall forward with that and you've got your pen on it.
You think so?
Like, yeah. I could have even let on he was foot blocked. Do you know the way he actually pulled out of the kick?
Yeah.
Maybe the push made him not kick it. Like, that's probably a penalty if you're put off not being able to kick it.
I've seen it before. Like, obviously when someone's going to kick and you push him, you usually get the penalty. But I just thought it was a little. It was just a little nudge, like I'm coming over to tackle you, you know, as well.
It made him stop kicking.
I think if Clifford had have fallen down there, we'd be talking about Clifford falling down there under that soft contact.
Well, maybe it's hard to know. But like, I mean, he couldn't get the shot off. That's the point I'm making. Yeah. If he was just pushed like that and bounced it and moved again, you'd say there's nothing in that. But when he was, you know, setting up to kick, and the push made him just let the ball drop and not kick, I would be more in line of saying that there must have been something a little bit more in that. What about poor Jordan Flynn? Not only did he get two red cards in two of his first three games, the highlights showed him kick it dreadful wide.
I saw this. I was like, what is happening? Like, our team never shows this. Like, just randomly.
I was thinking then, are they going to show a series of wides and show how Mayo were wasteful? Yeah. No, they just put poor Jordan Flynn's desperate effort at a point.
A 20-yard wide and then back to the normal play. Like, RT rarely even show, like, a bad foul or, you know, a red card moments. They just show score, a bit of analysis. But they just show Jordan Flynn and then cut back to the rest of the show. It was so weird.
Lousy on a young fella. Like, Jordan Flynn, I don't know, the fella can't catch a break at the moment. He just can't. He's had a serious baptism into inter-county senior football. What did you make of Oisín Mullins Black? He pleaded innocence after it, but sure, he knew exactly what he was doing there. He started crawling backwards to trip him up.
It actually reminded me, his reaction reminded me of Ryan Wiley as well. Just like, you know, you knew what you were doing.
Yeah.
You've given the ref a decision to make, like. Yeah, like, I appreciate the effort, but no, not today.
No, definitely not. And Higgins, really, if they drew it, I don't think it probably would have been a fair reflection, because Peter Keane said after the game, I felt we were going to hold on here today. And James Horan didn't really say after the game that he thought they deserved a draw based on their first half performance, but they could have drawn it. That's the reality of it.
Yeah,
that was a bad miss, really, because that wasn't that hard of a chance.
No, it was actually worrying enough for Kerry, like, to be so dominant and then to be clinging on like that and like getting out of jail with a bad miss at the end. And Pat Spillane was highlighting, he talked about Kerry's awful defensive record, but then said their defence is class now because he watched this game. And he was showing like the straight line of like the four players, and like, that's bad. Like, that's sort of textbook bad defending if you're trying to get more bodies back, because all that takes, even though there's four players there, just beat one of them and you're through. You sort of want them staggered. So if you beat one, somebody else can come in, or you can push knowing that somebody's behind you.
Right.
But they had four in a line that you can still just go by, and like, that's what happened.
And he gave it was a Moynihan and Geaney credit for being back in their own 21. Like, I mean, that's not where you want those two. Like, I mean, he's gassed. There's no doubt about that. Like, I mean, his analysis, I don't think his analysis is very strong, you know, at the moment. And yeah, that's definitely an example of that. Like, I mean, give me a break. You know, that's the last thing you want, is those lads back there, you know, trying to tackle and stuff like that. Definitely not Geaney anyway. So yeah, that was definitely an interesting one. Like I said, I was at the Laois Kildare game. Showed highlights of this, actually, RT. Isn't League Sunday fantastic, I have to just say? Isn't it brilliant now that those few changes that we've been crying out for? Joanne's an excellent presenter. They start off the show with a game that wasn't on television. And you're like, when I see that, I just go, ah, lovely. When you're at your freshest, there's a game you haven't seen and it's the one you're crying out for. And I saw at the Laois Kildare game, they didn't even have a gantry set up. They had two cameras over at the top of the terrace. But it looked much more professional than they had been doing it. Do you remember where they had two cameras? So maybe one is on a wide and the other is, you know, I think they were sending one camera, which just made it look, I don't know, whatever way they're doing it now, that even the Laois Kildare highlights, even though I was at the game and I saw that it wasn't a huge operation they had over there, but it still looked, you know, the highlights worked perfectly, you know, that kind of way. But again, starting to show off with the game that wasn't on the television, they run through the stuff pretty quickly. I think the Sunday game will be much improved Sunday game this year. I would love to see Joanne doing it, but she won't. It'll be back to Des Cal, who I think he ruins those shows. Honestly, they really do. Isn't it light, to the point, you know, snappy with Joanne as the presenter? Like, I know she can't do everything.
Yeah.
But I would love to see her doing the Sunday game.
Yeah, Des actually makes me feel nervous because
he does. He makes you feel uncomfortable and he makes me squirm at home.
Yeah, like, I'm not, like, I've stepped into your seat a few times and I don't think I'm a great presenter, but like, he actually gives us a sort of aura of that he's worried about what's happening and he's worried about what's going to be said. And he never seems to be just, like, Joanne seems so relaxed and so comfortable and she's moving through it with a nice pace to it all.
Yeah, and then she's able to say, like, I mean, yeah, is this new president, is he not now a yes man from the, you know...
She'll pull people up.
She pulls that up. Des will be like, no, Liz, you know, some people might say, you know, we don't know this is true now, you know.
Yeah, second guessing himself.
And he'd be apologising to the GA while he's saying it. And it's just like, what? And then, I mean, that's what he would do.
Tomas, you wanted to point out Kerry's attacking mark. Yeah, I want to talk about Kerry's attacking mark here. Like, why did you know that, Des? Like, but anyway, look, we're picking on him now. But
no, maybe I don't want to go over the top on Des, but like, I do think that the Sunday game would benefit definitely from Joanne doing it.
Yeah, and like, League Sunday is class now. And actually, one of the things I love, they're starting with a game that we haven't seen, but then when it got to, say, Dublin Tyrone, there's a full package. You can go watch that on the RT player if you want. It's short, it's condensed, it's just clip, 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 gone. Like, you know, you don't need to go over this whole thing again just because they have the footage. So they've actually condensed the games that are on for a full game that you can go watch.
Yeah, no, they're smart enough. Definitely improvements have not gone unnoticed, so fair play to them. So Kildare won 15-10. They could have been 15-3 up at half time. I mean, they're completely dominated Laois. There's no doubt, destroyed Laois on Laois's kickouts, Laois kicking into the wind, Kildare with a big press, and Corbett in the Laois goals constantly going out to Feely and Mulick, who are just two monsters of men, and Laois don't have a good fetch in midfield. We're just pinned in for the whole of the first half. Kildare played really well. We know that Kildare, I've said it a whole lot of times, even though Gerard Brennan and Kieran McKeever don't agree with me, they don't give Kildare too much credit. I think they're a very good team at Division 2 level, very, very good team, and they were way, way too strong for Laois. They had 9 wides in the first half. I think they scored 9 points and had 9 wides, or 8, it was 8-4 at half time. They could easily have been 15-16. They played very well, played through the half forward line. Like, I mean, Paddy Brophy played very well. And Paul Cribben, very wasteful with his shooting. But to just, you know, when you have a big wind and the temptation is just to be lamping it in, they weren't. They were moving it through the lines nicely. And Brophy and Cribben were on a lot of ball. And they had that presence on the half-forward line. Leash have no half-forward line, zero. They have no half-forward line. So again, there's a big disconnect and there's these hopeful balls kicked in and you get it into Evan O'Carroll, you're hoping he'll do it. And he was very well marshalled. And when he's well marshalled, Leash look to me like they have zero kind of other way or plan B. So, like, I mean, even Daniel Flynn was marked well by Piggott. He got on a good few balls, but he was wasteful. But look, it was terrible conditions. So you're not going to be too harsh on him. But yeah, it's important to say Kildare were by far and away the best team, but the wind did not only die down, it changed direction.
Yeah, the wind never won anybody a game except Kildare when they were playing Leash.
Yeah, have you anything to say on that?
I was going to just say suddenly Leash are needing a result now as well because they're 1 point off
that's
relegation.
The Clare result was a disaster for Leash yesterday and wasn't expected. Like, I mean, you would have been thinking Clare were going to go down and they wouldn't be able to catch Leash. Now Leash have to go away to Fermanagh and Westmeath. So, like, I mean, they're not definitely staying up at all. It's just, what are Cavan doing? To do your head in. Like, I mean, that just after three great wins in a row, just beat Clare at home, lads.
Yeah.
Beat them at home. They couldn't go and beat Clare at home after three brilliant wins in a row. You just can't make it up with these teams. But, what was I going to say? Oh, yeah, in the programme, I thought it was funny. Robbie Piggott was interviewed. And Paddy Brophy was interviewed as well. He was asked who his favourite player is. Robbie Piggott, he says Brendan Murphy with an X beside it. So I thought that was a nice little answer in the programme. Yeah, so that's it. We don't know when Fermanagh Armagh is going to be fixed. It wasn't fixed at the time of us coming into the studio here. So we don't know when. It'll have to be a midweek game. Like over one fixture, they're not going to push the league into April. Over one.
Yeah.
Now this fixture has to be played. It's not like years ago where the Division 4 teams just wrote them off. They'll have to play this because there's no way that Armagh won't be in the shake-up for the promotion or the final. So this game has to be played and Fermanagh could be in the shake-up for relegation.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to go out on a Wednesday night. So they're going to go 3 weeks in a row and one game midweek. No, there's no way around that.
No, and like right now, a result for Fermanagh will take them out of the relegation, like one win. Do you know we're going to put Clare and Kildare back into it? So, like, yeah, there's no way it's not going to have to be played. Yeah. And it will have to be a Wednesday night.
Yeah, we'll have to keep our eye out for that. Right, we'll come back and we'll run through some of the Congress motions that were passed. Happiness hit her like a train on a
track. I don't really know Jim anymore. Me and him were like best friends when we played, you know. He's seen the light of Jesus and I'm still like fighting the devil, you know. The dog days are over. The dog days are done. The horses are coming, so you better run. Run fast for your mother, run fast for your father. Run for your children, for your sisters and brothers.
So we have a new GA president, Conan, not the one we were expecting. Jarlett didn't make it. Jarlett had most first counts. Larry Murphy caught him on the second counts because he's originally from Cork and there's a Gerry O'Sullivan from Cork and those transfers worked in his favour. Transfer system a little bit harsh, but look, Jarlett didn't make the quota on the first one. So it'll be interesting to see. He's been 30 years in New York, Larry Murphy. So what his understanding of the issues on the ground here, that's up for debate. He's going to move home for the 3 years. So he's not going to be president for another year. I think there's like a year handover. So it'll be interesting to see how he gets on. He's been very critical of the GPA in the past, called them pirates. And obviously criticising his fundraising. We spoke about that on the show here before, that he criticises GPA for taking potential fundraising money from the New York kind of thing. He was interviewed after it and he says that his goal was to solve the fixtures. And I was thinking, what an outdated like slogan. What do you want to be solving the fixtures? We just had a fixture review. That's what John Horan tried to do. How are you going to come in and solve the fixtures when hopefully after this year's special Congress in September, we'll have fixed the fixtures?
Yeah, before you come in.
What's yours? So easy to throw that out, isn't it? Like, I'm going to fix the fixtures. And then without getting too critical of him, he hasn't even started in the job. This is what he says, which I just can't comprehend this. He says, now, the fixtures review committee have come out with a very good plan, I think, and I've said this to all the county boards I went to visit. They've identified 5 weekends in the middle of summer, in the best months of the year, June, July and August. They've moved things around to identify these as club only, and there is going to be a time earlier in the season and a time late in the year to play other club games. If you give certainty of fixtures to players, they can organise their GA life and organise their real life around those fixtures. Now, I looked at those quotes going, what the hell is he on about? They haven't... There's three new championship restructure proposals, and each one has either a spring club window or it has those gaps in the season. So they haven't decided that that's the new structure. So you've gone around to all your counties campaigning on something that's not even coming true. And I actually asked someone who was on that committee, what's going on with this? Has that been decided? And he said they're going to recommend the spring window option. They're not even going to recommend the option that this lad thinks, oh, they've come up with this ingenious idea. That they're actually come across saying, going to say that that's actually a little bit too difficult and that's not what they're going to recommend. So this isn't a great start from Larry, as far as I'm concerned.
No, I heard about a week before, I think, Des Cahill.
Sorry, just to cut you off. Jarlett's all over this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
You see, that's, you know?
That's it. Like, I heard Des Cahill interviewed all the candidates about a week ago, and to be honest, like, most of them didn't really have much substance to what they were saying. It was stuff like fix the fixtures. It was like, great, like, what's your plan? Like, you know, again, as you say, they're already in the process of doing that. Whereas Jarliff had three clear things he wanted to do, and we know like how involved Jarliff is, what a great club man he is, and how logical he is as well as a thinker. Yeah. So even like I didn't agree with Jarliff. He was talking about he wanted to go to 2 training sessions a week for county teams during the league to give clubs more time with their players. And I was sort of thinking, how are you going to do that? But you know that he's thought about it. He's got the stats to back it up. He was talking about this won't take away from the county game. He's got a report to show that, you know, we can do 40% less training and the players will still be hitting the same heights. He's thought all this through, like, and he's somebody I would trust to disagree with, you know, because you know that he's actually acting in the best interest of what's for everybody. So it's a real shame that he didn't get through.
It is a shame. It is a shame that, you know, he's definitely up to date with all the issues, and like you say, has every time he comes on the show, there's a lot of times I don't agree with him, and I wouldn't agree with him on those training things either. I'd be the same as you, but look, at least he'll argue it in a way that might give you food for, you know what I mean, food for thought, because like you said, he's done his homework on it.
And his reasoning behind it is he's actually thinking he's acting in the best interest of everyone. So, like, again, you trust that he's doing right. And I was up, did a video with him and his club before the Congress, and I was up in Silverbridge, and it's unbelievable, like, what they put together up there. Like, this place is a tiny, it's not even a village, it's not a village status. It's got 40 houses, and they've got over £3 million development of a clubhouse there, and you chat to them, and like, you know, everybody would talk about how much the Jarliff has been involved, and he's still the club secretary. It's just like everything about this man's life spoke that he should be the GA president, and he would have been great for everybody.
Yeah. Well, look, listen, we wish Larry the best.
Yeah.
But there is that lingering thought that he's the yes man that the current management wanted to come into the job, and Jarlett might have been a little bit radical and a little bit too forward thinking. Because to me, would Jarlett Burns have signed a new league sponsorship deal when potentially there could be no league next year? I doubt he would have. Would Larry McCarthy? He probably would have looked to see what they did before and continued on. Do you know what I mean? Doing the same thing over and over again. If you're a lifer administrator, that tends to be the thing that you end up doing. But look, we'll hold this space and see how Larry gets on. The back pass snuck in there. I've no problem with this coming in here. It's, to be honest with you, there's so many drama queens on Twitter. It's incredible. I saw one tweet where a fella says he's walking away from the GEA. No more, he said, over this. So you receive, then there's other people thinking up of ways around this where you put the full back in goals to take the
kick
out.
Well, actually, I've got some experience with this. Remember I told you that I played in goals last year for one half and kickouts were terrible. So the full back said, get out of the way, I'll take it. But I went short to get a short off him.
Right.
And the ref blew me up because I wasn't allowed outside my area. So there is a way around that. The keeper can't be outside the area to receive the ball, so the fullback would still have to.
So you're down
it.
A man.
Yeah,
you'd be down a man. Yeah. So that meant there's nothing in that.
And
then.
You can't kick right. it short and give it back to the. You know what I mean?
Okay. So like, I mean that this is basically this rewards the team that's pressing. Right, and there was some work done on this on Kieran Deely's new website, Deely Sports Science, and they did some stats on this, and approximately 8% of kickouts have been returned to the goalkeeper during the Division 1 games so far in the league. So you'd be interested in to hear Galway are the worst culprits at 15%, Tyrone 14%, Donegal didn't do it at all. They've never done it. So, like, I mean, why is there such outrage over something that happens very rarely, and that the odd time that it does happen, then I suppose you could make the argument and say, why bring it in if it happens
very
rarely?
Yeah, that's sort of what I was thinking.
But I suppose if it rewards the team that's trying to be more, you know, aggressive, what's wrong with it?
Yeah, I just thought, like, is this necessary? Do we need it in the game? Like, is it really that offensive to see, like, a keeper coming out is aggressive? Like, it's
but that
it's
can
risky.
Still happen. That just can't happen from the 1-2 from the goal kick.
Yeah.
Like, the goalkeeper can absolutely come out. No one's stopping him. And Graham Brody, most of the times he headed off, were not from 1-2s, from kickouts. Mm. He came onto the play. Like, Niall Morgan, Roy Begg and all these lads, they can all still come out. Again, that's an extreme view to rubbish something. Nobody wants to see the end of goalkeepers, nor will we see the end of. Niall Morgan's a loose cannon. Graham Brody's a loose cannon. Rory Began is not a loose cannon, but likes to come out and has a great kick. That's not going to stop those lads.
Well, that's fair, but I think it's an extreme view to just say, like, just stop that entirely. Like, I don't get what the problem was going back to the keeper. Like, actually, my biggest complaint about GA is when the ball's not in play. Like, I love when actually we get it going again faster. So sometimes that's the keeper kicking it out and then going, and we're going back
to
the pitch.
But the time he goes faster is the time someone's there to go to without being under pressure. The problem is, and I do think it is, it's not good to look at, is if there's a great big press, you're trying really hard, then one lad breaks free really quickly. He chips it to the goalkeeper, or the goalkeeper chips it to him. He immediately gives it back to the goalkeeper. He's being marked. Now everyone has a man, and the goalkeeper's just soloing out with it. Do you know what I mean? Wondering what to do with it. That's not ideal, right? So maybe it will encourage more long kicking, more contests. What gets the crowd off their seats? Contests, man on man. Contests. They don't necessarily get off their seat to see it chipped with a lad back to the goalie and now soloing out uncontested. It's like the crowd are going, you know, this is a bit boring.
Yeah, like I know what you mean, and I know, like, your point is the keeper can still get the ball. Like, the crowd get off their feet for Began pinging passes against Dublin.
And he can still do that.
Yeah, but he'd have to come onto it. It just makes it harder for the keeper to come onto it because he has to get it off two men who are marked, which is unlikely.
I think the game is turning back in a more exciting way anyways. Like, I mean, I don't think this is a big one.
Yeah, you're right. This isn't a big one. That's probably where the frustration comes from, is that people are probably annoyed that there's always something. Like, you know, like, look at hurling. They just gather together to rule out the black card because they think there's no cynicism in hurling. But with football, it's always just, there has to be some sort of input in it, and I don't think it was that.
People are annoyed about the mark. There was an advance mark amendment that was made in that an opposition, it allows the opposition to tack a player immediately if he wins a mark inside the large or small rectangle and elects to play on. That was obviously the loophole in that, which was bizarre stuff. I saw Daniel Flynn in a Moore Park yesterday catch a mark into his belly. Like, for me, that's not a mark. Mm-hmm. But he didn't put his hand up anyways. But I was actually talking to a friend of mine at the game yesterday, and do you know what? Like, if they don't want to change the mark from being inside the 45, do you know a very easy amendment to the mark? Has to be a catch over your head. We'd see less of them, but it's a good, any catch over your head is a much more difficult catch. If somebody's running behind you, it's a very difficult catch. Wouldn't that be much easier amendment than what pisses people off is this little crappy catch into your belly.
Yeah, but
like Mannix could catch a ball into his belly. He's only turned 3.
But at least with that, it's black and white. It's a kick and you catch it. You know, whereas you catch it over your head, then it's like, oh, was that over the head? Was
it's
over
very
the
clear
head?
What's over your head, mate.
Yeah, is it?
Is it not?
I don't know. I don't know. We've been talking about this in a few
months. When your hands are up over your head. How clear
are you? What happens if you catch it just in front of your face?
Well, that's not over your head.
In front of your forehead.
The ball has to be above eye level. right? Okay, look, I'm just trying to think of a way around this event, Mark, because to me, that's the shittiest little rule that's come in a while, and I feel bad about saying that, but that, because it was my idea to begin with, but it's just not. That's terrible, some of these marks, and without going too much into that.
Yeah, I saw the ref in the Mayo Kerry game gave a mark, but he ended up just ignoring it. He blew the whistle for, I think it was Gainey or somewhere like that caught it, but they wanted to play on.
Oh yeah.
And you could see people sort of pausing, and it did affect the play a little bit. Kerry still got the score, but he automatically thought, Mark, I'll blow it.
I noticed that, alright. So the Tier 2 Football Championship has been named. It's called the Tarleton Cup. That's fine. I've no problem with that. Park Tarleton has already used up that name, but that's not the end of the world. Hopefully Mead will never have to play for it, for anybody from Mead listening. But this is the thing, I don't want this to be called the Tarleton Cup anyways. The All-Ireland is not called the Sam Maguire Cup. The Sam Maguire is the cup that you receive for winning the All-Ireland. And that same principle has to be applied to this other All-Ireland, because this is an All-Ireland. And it has to be called an All-Ireland. And the cup that you receive for winning that All-Ireland is the Tarleton Cup. If you go around calling this the Tarleton Cup, it's just a nonsense novelty cup. Am I right or wrong?
Yeah.
Like if you win an intermediate county title, you win a county title. You win a junior county title. So this Tier 2 is an All-Ireland. It's a Tier 2 All-Ireland. All-Ireland 2. And the cup you receive is they brought the Tarleton Cup around to the schools. Not lovely. But they didn't win the Tarleton Cup. They won the All-Ireland 2. Do you get me? Some people might listen to that and say, oh, that's only semantics. It's not. That's very, very important for players to win an All-Ireland. They're winning an All-Ireland, not winning a Tarleton Cup.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I don't think this is going to save the day if that's like...
I think it will give it a lot more prestige if it's referred to as an All-Ireland. You have to win, you're winning an All-Ireland like you're winning a county title at all those levels. Do you know? Like, I mean, the Tommy Murphy Cup. Like, if that was called an All-Ireland, like, I mean, players want to win All-Irelands. Players want to win county titles. They don't care the level. It's a county title. This is an All-Ireland.
Yeah.
You get me?
I was genuinely happy like that it wasn't a GA legend's name, like Tommy Murphy, one of the greatest GA legends of all time. And like, you know, his name wasn't smeared, but like his name being associated
didn't
with
do
cup,
his name any, yeah, any good, I suppose.
People,
yeah,
sort of scoffed at, like, you know, it wasn't a good thing. Yeah, like I don't know what you're saying, but yeah, I don't think that's going to be the saving of this this idea.
You're right. The saving of it will be promotion. And John Horan is saying vital the marketing and promotion of this new competition delivers. In addition to having its own all-star selection, it is our intention to have the semi-finals and the final of the Tarleton Cup. Don't like that, yeah, calling it the Tarleton Cup, live on RT from Croke Park. It is our intention. That's not saying it's going to happen. That's saying you're intending it to happen, which, you know, is not absolutely ideal. And it's vital the marketing and promotion of this new competition delivers. Whose responsibility is that on? Is that on RT, Sky, whoever the media companies are, or is that the GEA? That's on the GEA to promote this. This is their competition.
And those three games, semi-finals and final, are they being taken away from the current deal? Like, you know, are we losing out three games now?
Exactly.
In the football? We're not already getting enough.
Exactly. Yeah. Is that being taken out? Is this going to be played in half-empty Croke Park? You know, Croke Parks. When is it going to be on? Will it be doubled up with something else? Will it be played before? Would it not be good to play it? Bring the Joe McDonagh Cup forward and have the hurling Tier 2 along with the football Tier 2 and get a better crowd, yeah, in Croke Park. Would all these things not be ironed out? You see, that would be difficult because the Joe McDonagh Cup winners get back into the All-Ireland series, so it would probably be too early maybe in the year for that to happen.
Well, I read concerns about Dublin's, we'll get on to this, their Croke Park game, and you know, the idea that if they're not playing at Croke Park, then the Tarleton Cup final, the All-Ireland 3 final, won't be a Croke Park potentially because it was supposed to be on before a Super 8 game. Which again, like the fact that you would even think about putting it on before a Super 8 group game, a quarter final group match, like that, that's when it becomes Tarleton Cup.
Desperate.
And not an All-Ireland final.
That is desperate. That should be on the Saturday before the All-Ireland,
yeah,
football. And
I think so, yeah.
And that's when it should be on. On All-Ireland final weekend when everybody's up in Dublin and the build-up happens, and people might say that it would be potentially... dwarfed by the All-Ireland, the Division 1 All-Ireland final. I'm going to say Division 2 All-Ireland final, that the Division 1 All-Ireland final. It would, but if the GAA series about promoting it, then maybe it shouldn't. And listen, if you're up for the All-Ireland weekend, wouldn't it be great to go to Croke Park the day before for a dry run, have a few pints, look at the Division 2 All-Ireland final, who the winners received the Talton Cup. It's the only way I'm going to refer to it from now on. Do you know, it should be on the Saturday. And I think that would be giving it the prestige that it deserves. And on television, obviously, as well.
I agree.
So Dublin Super 8's won. If Dublin make the Super 8s this year, they could play twice outside Croke Park after the motion. It was motion 19. 90% support. Wow. But I suppose this is the big thing, the way they've done this. They've done this very well. I'm not sure where the motion came from. So instead of it being Dublin can't play their home game in Croke Park because it's not their home ground, that would be the big one, right? So now they're saying you can play neutral games outside Croke Park. So they'll go fill Thurles with Dublin or something now, because Dublin weren't filling Croke Park with these Super 8s anyways. Mm. So they're not really losing out. They're smart enough. Whereas if Dublin had to play their home game in Parnell Park, they'd be losing out on a lot of money. Am I being overly cynical here?
No, you're being
They've extended the neutral to make it not Dublin's home ground neutral, to make it a provincial neutral ground.
But they've kept it flexible, so in the event that Dublin are playing Kerry or Mayo for that game, that they can still go to Croke Park.
Right.
Which we'd all probably end up complaining about then anyway, but like from the GAA point of view, they're thinking we can still get 60,000 people in, so we'll keep that option open.
Yeah, and their home, obviously Kerry and Mayo would never complain about that, because there is a psychology to that if you're admitting going to Croke Park against Dublin is a disadvantage, that's not the message you need to hear.
Yeah.
You know, it's not for the very top teams to complain about that, even though they would be right if they did. So that's it. That's kind of all the other ones. Club games to 70 minutes was defeated, Conan. Jeez. You'd be happy to hear.
I'm so delighted. I didn't even know that was up, and I was like, oh my God, when I saw, like, I think somebody had tweeted about it going, they're now voting on this, and I was like, spat me tea out.
Yeah. But that's the thing, and everybody, and while you know, when rules come in and everybody says, what about the club game? Like, I never really go along with that. But I was thinking, what about junior football or intermediate football? Exactly. How the hell are people meant to, you know, that is a big, and you add injury time onto that as well, and the extra time with the subs, you're looking 77 minutes for a club match. You'd be absolutely gone. Right, we'll come back with performance of the weekend.
Advice he gave me back then was, we were in the Glen Royal on a night out, and I'd never met him before, and he put his arm around me and he said, you won't go too far wrong if you win the ball and give it to me. I said, all right, well, okay.
That's great advice.
Yeah, it was. For you.
Performance of the weekend, Conan, and Gavin White is first here on my list. He's in his best position, which is the obvious thing, as number seven. And the thing about Gavin White is that he's this straight line runner and has speed coming at the goals. A fella like him probably can't adapt to having his back to goal as a wing forward. It's just not in him to do it. You know what I mean? He just can't. He's a man that gets ahead of steam and runs at the goal and catches up on play and breaks lines. Jack McCaffrey can do that, and he has Jack McCaffrey electric pace. And the more you think about it, wasn't it crazy Kerry ever playing him anywhere other than number seven, really? Like, he's such a weapon. I was actually, if Kieran McKeever had been here, I was saying, like, if there was a transfer market, the likes of Armagh might be going for a Gavin White, you know, or a Jack McCaffrey, someone that's dangerous off the half-back line that I'm not sure Armagh have. He was brilliant last week against Meath as well. Even though the highlights didn't show him up brilliantly, the analysis they did on him afterwards just showed him, you know, just electrifying pace coming on, causing all sorts of problems.
Yeah, it is such a different role, isn't it? Like wing forward and wing back. And not only does he get to see the play, he doesn't have to win ball if he's back to goal. He gets to start from the 45 and just go.
Yeah.
And his move is a start and an end, whereas if he's wing forward, he's tracking back, he's tackling, and then he's going.
Yeah, and somebody could actually follow him tracking back.
Exactly.
So he doesn't have that free run of it, you know? So, like, I mean, it does, tactically, it makes so much more sense having him back there. But, like, he will give them an extra dimension there, there's no doubt. Did you notice Clifford staying with him on the highlights? When he broke once, Clifford was on that break, and Clifford stayed with Gavin White's pace. Imagine, is there anything Clifford can't do?
No, I don't think there is. Like, I never realised how fast he was until you see him burning some cornerbacks who you know are really fast. I always thought it was in his head, but then like when he can go over 20 metres, he can go. Like, you know, he's electric as well.
Unbelievable, unbelievable. Michael Langan, absolutely unbelievable. I love Michael Langan is that he's effortless at everything he does. He's never under too much pressure. Someone could be tackling him and he's not really paying attention. A bit like David Moran we laugh at sometimes, even though he's a different player than David Moran. He's like a big tall forward playing in midfield. Isn't that kind of what he's like? He's like an extra forward on the field. Long range points, we know he's brilliant at them, left and right. Great runner. Potentially Darren Hughes dropping off being a sweeper all the time might not have, you know, helped Monaghan's cause when you have someone like Michael Langan in midfield. I'm not saying they were directly marking each other, but they're a man down in midfield probably when Hughes does that.
It was just a massive, massive game from him. Like, even before he scored, I think he had won about four or five kickouts before he got his first point, and he ended up scoring 5 points. But, he just seemed to know where they were going. A lot of them weren't even over his head. He wouldn't have got a mark for them. He was catching a lot in his chest just by reading them and going at them aggressively. Absolutely brilliant. And him and McFadden have a real good partnership going there as well, where he was going with McFadden a lot and then playing off him because McFadden's this big bull attracting three men to him, and then Langan was making those darting runs.
Yeah.
Like, brilliant performance.
They have options in midfield now, because when Jason McGee gets back into the mix, like, I'm not sure to shuffle things around that all three of them play. I think you just have three options for midfield, like Dublin do, when you take off one of them on 50 minutes after running themselves into the ground and you bring somebody else on. Wouldn't that be the kind of way? Because we know McFadden plays the role of sweeper when needed. And maybe depending on the opposition, who do I need here? I have three. Mm. It's important to have that kind of almost squad. And you say to whoever's not playing, look, today's not your day. Well, actually, Langan would play every day. I would be alternating McFadden and McGee. And I would be saying, look, I need you for 20 minutes. The next day, if we need to change things around, we'll use somebody else.
Yeah, and like, they already have enough help out there with Michael Murphy and Kieran Thompson. You know, so they've got enough bodies. At one time, they don't need another like Jason McGee in there on top.
Yeah, no, exactly. Right, Niall Morgan, incredible stuff. I was watching the first half. He went running up the field and tried to kick a ball from play 45 metres out wide. And I went, that lad is a liability coming out here. And then he kicked the great scores in the second half. And I went, Jesus, that was phenomenal. The one that had the big curl on it, and then the other one that was even further out. Mm-hmm. And then I really liked even the free that he took that was close in, where he just whacked it as far as he could into the wind and let the wind bring it back in and around. So, like, I mean, he had an excellent performance against Kerry before. Listen, Niall Morgan's a unique type of character in that he's a goalkeeper that just loves the spotlight being on him. You know, you just know by him. I'm not saying that as a critique of him. He's a bit of a character, and he likes to play kind of to the crowd, and he enjoys being the main man. It's not easy for goalkeepers to be the main man, but if there's anything close enough for a goalkeeper being the main man, him and Graham Brody, even though Graham Brody wouldn't have that personality at all.
Yeah, like, look, I like confident players, and especially like my goalkeepers to be confident, like, you know, bordering on not arrogance, but like just being sure of themselves. Like, and he definitely is that. Like, the worst thing I want in a goalkeeper is somebody who's shitting themselves. And yeah, you're right. Every time Morgan, I think it's inside the 45, he's thinking, I could score here. Like that one, he took a shot. He actually could have sold and then taken a shot, but he just thought, bang, I'm going for it, and he hit it wide.
Wild a shot.
Yeah, the frees were amazing, but what he does when he's running out is that he goes for it, like, and that draws people, and then when he's popping it off, he's actually freed somebody up.
Yeah.
Like, you see Shane Ryan's mistake against Mayo. Like, he got the ball, and instead of moving, he's out the pitch. There's no need to be out there because he ends up passing it off to somebody who's being marked. You know, so he didn't create an overlap. He didn't free anybody up. It was pointless.
Yeah. Isn't it funny when you see how Niall Morgan and Graham Brody come out, break lines, and cause a bit of panic? It's not necessarily because of the jersey on their back. It's to highlight how slow some of the defenders work it out sometimes. Like, how can he move it so fast and be so positive with it? Whereas defenders go sideways a couple of times and won't bring it out at that pace at all. Would you agree with that? Do you know what I mean? They just, when a goalie comes out, they seem to go for it.
Yeah, no.
Whereas you might be like some of the defenders. Why don't you go for it like he does?
Now, maybe it's because he's coming as a free man.
As a free man, yeah.
So it's easier to go for it, and he gets excited. But maybe that's it.
Okay, yeah. But look, okay, defenders can be free men too sometimes. I'm not going to completely go back on it. Paddy Brophy, excellent yesterday. Three from play for Kildare. Like I said, Kildare played through their half-forward line really, really well. Brophy looks a lot slimmer and a lot more agile than he did in other years. He'd gone off form altogether. But it's interesting that Jack O'Connor is playing him regularly as a wing forward. Now, the minute I see him on the field, I think of Michael Daly for Galway. I think of a big man wing forward, not a worker half forward by any means, a scoring half forward who's just a big man. Do you know? Mm. And like, I mean, there's something in that, and they're not trying to track back, because that's not Paddy Brophy's game or Michael Daly's game. They're on the half forward line and they're there. And I'm like a broken record about saying, if you don't have a half forward line presence, you might as well forget about it. And Kildare have Cribben and Brophy, and the ball moves through them, and then they move it on, and the lads inside get better ball. And tactically, Laois had all their half forward line running around. It's not a good half forward line anyways, and now they have no half forward presence, or no, look at that presence, Paul Cribben and Paddy Brophy, they're two big monsters. Yeah. Like, they're a huge team, Kildare, and Paddy Brophy definitely seems to have brought his game back to the level where that he probably should be.
Yeah, like, and he's a really nice passer as well, so it's good.
Good football brain, yeah.
So it's good having him out there. Like, they were playing him full forward for a while, and he wins ball really well, but almost wasted a little bit. You want them out, like that's like a traditional half forward role, or like, you know, one of the old, like, you have a number 12 who can into midfield and win some ball for you, and he's doing that. He's a middle third player and pinging passes inside. I think that,
and Cribben's like that too. Can drop into midfield if needed. That's a big plus for them. And you're right, but like, isn't it crazy that Paddy Brophy and Michael Daly playing wing forward, and they're good, they're forwards with forward brains.
Yeah.
Like, isn't it? Just telling them to play a little bit further up. They know the balls. They know how to play half forward.
Yeah, and we need those players on the half forward line.
Yeah. No, definitely right. Cork were hammering Derry, Conan, until Kerry made, they were 10 points ahead after they scored their third goal, which John O'Rourke scored 2-2. I have him down here as well. Sean Poulter was excellent as well, according to Moss O'Shea, who was at the game. According to his Twitter, he's playing centre back now, and he's brilliant at running onto ball. But Derry played everybody. Derry played everybody behind the ball against the wind. Again, I don't have a problem with that. Against Cork, against the wind, packed the defence, and they were well in it at half time. I think there was only 4 points in it, and then obviously Derry left three up then in the second half with the wind. And Cork started finding holes in it.
They'll not be doing that again.
That's that kind of catch two situation.
Yeah. The wind must have turned around, actually, against Derry.
Don't know how that always happens. But I suppose then you look at Derry and you score 3-11, and then you say, geez, they can't be too defensive if they score that. But I think they got 2-2 in like the last 5 minutes.
Yeah, no, they really, like, they made that scoring look better than what it was. Derry have Longford now at home in the next game, and that's like must win. They're already looking like they're not going to have a chance of getting promoted. But if Down slip up and Derry beat Longford, then they're right back in it.
But they're also looking over their shoulder, aren't they? Because, like, I mean, Leitrim are after winning. So I was looking at this Division 2, because if Ryan O'Rourke, he scored 2-3 against Louth, which was a brilliant win for Leitrim. So that puts them up to 3 points. Level on points with Tipperary. Tipperary play Offaly next, who are also on 5 points. Leitrim play Down away. So you'd imagine Leitrim won't get anything out of the Down game. And who will say, Tip beat Offaly. Right, they're on 5 points. Offaly are on 5 points. Who did you say Derry have?
Longford
at home. They have to beat them, or else they're on five, because Leitrim played Tip at home in the last game. Now, Leitrim can lose the next game against Down. If they beat Tip at home in the last game, they go ahead of Tip on the head-to-head. Now, they just have to hope there's no one else on 5 points, or it'll go score difference. Where do you get me? It gets a little bit complicated. But what I'm saying is, you want Derry, Offaly, want to get off that 5 point mark, because Leitrim can get at it and Tipperary can get at it.
Yeah, maybe it's my northern cockiness, but I was just looking further ahead.
You're looking ahead.
Yeah. And like Derry, I think, have Offaly in the last game, so.
Yeah, Offaly in the last game.
They can look after themselves if they are in bother.
Yeah.
Rather than stay ahead of Offaly, sort of thing. But
Well, I think Offaly definitely, after yesterday's result and things going so well for them, that, you know, they've got Tip. If they lost that away, then they have to play Derry. And that might be to stay up, although they'd be on 5 points.
Mm.
As long as their score difference isn't worse than Leitrim's, they might be okay.
Yeah.
Do you get me? So we've kind of done a roundabout way of figuring that one out. Have we figured it out?
Even? I don't think so.
So that's it. So maybe Leitrim are down then, because if they play Tip at home, someone else will be around the 5 point mark. That, I'm just going to.
Derry aren't going up.
Who got player of the look, Michael Langan. Player performance of the weekend. Like, I mean, I'm not going to say player of the weekend. Man of the match. Man of the match now is player of the match sometimes, but I'm not going to go down that line. Michael Langan, performance of the weekend, 5 from play, outstanding stuff from midfield. Absolutely brilliant player who you just love watching him, don't you? He plays Gaelic football just gracefully and easily. And that's it. Congratulations to him. That's all we've time for. We'll be back on Thursday. We'll preview next weekend's matches, and we'll probably have some more news on the postponed game as well. We'll talk to you then. Good luck.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both parents have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing houses for f***ing 10 years.